listening to the Big Blue Podcast. I'm Greg Stone, Associate VP of Academic and Campus Operations, here as always with Dr. Lee Goodson, our President and CEO. Hello, Dr. Goodson.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing really well today, and I'm excited that we get to talk about a topic that I get to hear a lot about because our guest today is somebody I get to work with pretty closely, and that is Cindy Shanks, our Dean of Engaged Learning. And Cindy's here to share with us a bit of an update, maybe for some people an introduction to Caring Campus. So Cindy, thanks for spending some time with us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Can we just start off by having you remind us about the premise of Caring Campus? What's that program's mission, and how does having a Caring Campus benefit students?
Yeah, so the program's mission is to create a really positive and supportive environment for students and by infecting the campus culture with certain behavioral strategies that hopefully contribute to students' sense of connectedness to the institution, to their teachers, to their classes, to their peers. And specifically, all of that's happening again through the development of student-centered behaviors and activities, in this case, within the context of what we're talking about today, via faculty in the classroom. And, you know, the overarching goal, not surprisingly, the benefit to students is that, you know, it increases the likelihood when you have those kinds of behavioral strategies and activities happening, it increases the likelihood that students are going to learn and persist.
Mm-hmm. Which is what we're constantly
putting
out there in front of ourselves as a goal, right? Tell us about the model for, I mean, what does this mean for faculty? What is the Caring Campus model for faculty? There are schools across the nation engaged in this, so we didn't make it up ourselves. We didn't invent it, right?
Absolutely.
So what is this model for faculty, and what's unique about it?
Well, I will say that the coaching model was really unique for the original faculty cohort that was trained, and the folks from the Institute for Evidence-Based Change really worked with them, with us. I was part of that group for the entire academic year. Mm-hmm. And it was a process that involved kind of deep and iterative reflections on your own educational experiences, good and bad, not only in higher education, but really across the educational endeavor. And to think about the things that helped you persist and the things that might have been barriers or stopped you in your tracks in some way, right? So as a result of that process, the team landed on these four behavioral strategies, what IEBC calls pillars, essentially. So these student-centered behavioral strategies that are the key, we hope, to student success, and they are to create an environment of empathy and compassion, to connect with students by making oneself accessible, to provide clear and complete and transparent expectations, et cetera, and to provide feedback early and often, which, of course, has implications for assigning work early and often, which further implies that one is probably embedding lots of formative assessment as opposed to only high-stakes summative assessments. So very specific in that way. But here's the important thing. The initiative is really about the intentional design of practices and spaces and relationships that there's a woman who's at Columbia Law School. Her name is Susan Stern, and she talks about students fully participating within the context of the educational endeavor, right? And she's saying that it's more likely that students are able to fully participate when there are pathways to social and economic citizenship through education for all students, and in particular for underserved students. So I think just in terms of underserved students, because the research shows, and it's pretty unequivocal, right, that those students are less likely to have had supportive relationships with instructors in an educational setting, right? And the hope is that where these practices are present, those students too are going to be more likely to fully participate and thus to persist, right? But I think another important aspect of that is that it's not just underserved students who are going to benefit, right? I mean,
right.
We all know students who, for whatever reason, and there are many of them, right, who don't define themselves as good students, who don't even define themselves as students, you know, which we know. I think about my own younger son who used to say, school is the place I go to fail. When you have that perspective, you know, it's really hard to attach yourself to the endeavor, right? And we think about, I think even maybe more importantly, those students that we know we have at the community college who just have packed schedules, right? They've got schedules full of work and family obligations, and they disappear on us sometimes because the schedule gets just untenable for them, yeah. right? Those students are going to benefit from a framework of, you know, compassion and clarity and communication and feedback, right?
Yeah. Cindy, our involvement, Caring Campus, began just as the COVID-19 pandemic was getting yeah. started, and I know we've talked about this before, but what ways do you think that these initiatives through Caring Campus helped students make it through those couple of really difficult years when having a physical presence on campus was so limited for so many people?
Yeah, just really incredible timing in terms of that. I think that the strategy of frequent feedback in particular was really critical, you know, to helping students stay the course and stay connected, because obviously if we weren't, of course we've always had online, but to the extent that nobody was relationally together, you know, physically together, it just became really critical to have multiple forms of feedback and to figure out ways that, you know, we're able to pull in everybody essentially. But certainly, I mean, you can't talk about the pandemic without talking about the importance of empathy and compassion. And as a behavioral, you know, strategy or pillar, I don't know of a faculty member at that time who didn't extend a lot of grace. I mean, I think that was something that became top of mind for everyone anyway. So it was incredible timing in that sense. I mean, obviously, Caring Campus, IEBC, they're emphasizing the relational aspect of teaching, right? And that's you know, not at the expense of content, and not certainly not as a way to replace content, but just to say that, you know, here's the environment in which the content is going to be delivered, essentially.
You and your team have recently hosted sessions for faculty and staff to learn more about how to get involved and how to share. People are sharing their experiences in their own classroom
yes.
about using the Caring Campus model. What are some of the interesting accomplishments you've heard about, and maybe some highlights that maybe exceeded your expectations?
So the informal coaching really kind of continues, right? We've had online workshops, and we've got in-person roundtables right now happening at all the campuses, where students are, students are asked to attend, but faculty specifically are asked to attend and to reflect on their use of the behavioral strategies, their perceptions of what's being asked in terms of the behavioral strategies. We've had folks talking about their reasoning. We've had folks talking about how they've kind of grappled with using these strategies, basically. I think that the thing that strikes me every time is really the creativity. You know, for some folks, these are behavioral practices that are just part and parcel of who they are, right? But the creativity that had to happen within the context of the pandemic, for example, and I think about the subtlety, too. I think about it's sometimes just really subtle, right? So we had one person who happens to be a Caring Campus team member who said that something that she switched in the classroom was to go from saying, when students who often our students aren't going to be the ones to raise their hand and say something, right? Many of them don't. But when a student who maybe never or doesn't typically speak raises his or her hand and says something, and maybe it's not completely on course, to not necessarily come back with, yeah, nah, you know, but, or, well, I don't think you're quite there, but she said that she always says yes, but. No, I'm sorry. She says yes and, right, mm-hmm. instead of yes, but, mm-hmm. or
right.
no, but, or, eh, yeah, or just, you know, just leading with something that was kind of negative, which kind of just shuts people down. Or
positive language is so important when you're giving feedback.
Yeah, so I just love that. Mm-hmm. Yes, and, you know, and I think that the kinds of things that some folks have talked about has to do with the way that the strategies might push people to be a little vulnerable in the classroom. So, for example, if I'm trying to be accessible and I'm trying to be relatable, and I've determined, even though I don't have any skill with it, that I'm going to learn everybody's names. And I've got six classes, and that's quite a challenge, in fact, right? I'm going to learn everyone's names. I've just kind of made the decision that I'm going to allow myself to be a little vulnerable in front of my students, because I'm not going to probably achieve it, but they're going to see me work through it, and they're going to see me persist at it. And together, we're going to maybe figure out something collaborative. And that's the kind of, that's the kind of stuff that comes up within the context of the workshop. And I have to say, too, that I've just really been impressed by the way that folks have come to these meetings and been very forthright about their concerns. The issue of fairness always comes up. Obviously we give fairness it's a primary value in this nation and certainly within the context of education. People want to do the right thing. They want to make sure that they're not creating a situation where somebody's going to be hurt down the line, right? So it's a challenge for folks in that way, but I think it's led to so much creativity in terms of the way people make themselves accessible in particular, but also the way that people have been willing to, just walk out to the edge a bit in terms of, I'm going to try some things with groups, I'm going to try some things with peer work that I've never tried before, because, this gets at the kind of clarity and transparency in terms of what we're trying to achieve that is necessary, that I know is necessary and that's going to work.
Cindy, as we wrap up, is there one thing that you wish more employees and maybe particularly more faculty members knew about Caring Campus and the work that you all are doing?
Yeah, I've heard some faculty members say, it's just common sense, and again, we do have folks for whom this is typical behavior in the classroom, I think that what folks need to really understand about the entire initiative, essentially, is that their original idea, Caring Campus, IEBC's original idea, was that the structure of higher education, really, was created with a particular student in mind. And that particular student had very particular resources and very particular support structures and a very particular social and economic reality, right? And, their idea is that, importantly, the structure has not substantially changed. But the students themselves have incredibly, mm-hmm. right? So we've got, particularly at the community college, we have students who are representative of the entire population, really. And so to that extent, they're really suggesting that, the formal and informal structure needs to change a little bit. And certainly that's going to involve climate change, culture change. Mm-hmm. And that's behavioral change, right? Yeah. And that's a challenge. I mean, nobody changes quickly in terms of anything, right? And particularly when you're talking about established institutions and maybe, frankly, beloved kind of values and norms within the context of the classroom. So, so there's more complexity is my point. Faculty have to think about these strategies. They have to kind of grapple with where they stand on them. They have to figure out how to integrate them, right? They have to do all that. And what's been really important about the roundtables, I would say in particular, is that they've been just really supportive environments for everybody to come and to talk about that very openly. Again, we've begun to invite students into this process. And students are there to talk about their experiences with these kinds of behavioral strategies. They've been suggesting things. And, to the extent that it's something that faculty and students can co-create. I mean, that's just about as cool as it gets where I'm concerned, but it just has potentially incredible benefits for the students in particular who are involved in that.
And before we go, if somebody wants to know more about Caring Campus, where do they go?
Yeah, so, a couple of things. They can contact Brian Benson, who is under Arthur Benson in Outlook. They can go to the Caring Campus library guide, which is on the research on the library's homepage. And they can certainly just contact me as well, Cindy Shanks, or Engage Learning. Absolutely. We have some workshops coming up this semester.
Great.
Cindy Shanks, Dean of Engage Learning, here to talk to us today about Caring Campus. Thank you so much for that wonderful information and the passion that you all put around what happens in the classroom. You've been listening to the Big Blue Podcast. My name's Lee Goodson. Always appreciate my co-host, Dr. Greg Stone. We'll see you next time.